My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as a minister of this congregation, and I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Lori McGee, who's serving as our worship associate. I'm also joined in welcoming you by Hal Walker and this lovely ensemble, the Fallow Time Folk Orchestra. In the spirit of preserving the reverence of this space and making this moment a true moment of worship, I invite you to place your phones in worship mode. Which means that if you would like to take a photo or a video, you're welcome to do so, but if you could silence all functions, that would be very appreciated. It is good to be together on this glorious golden morning, and once again, I bid you welcome. I light our chalice, symbol of our free faith, with gratitude for the opportunity to worship as we choose, to lift our hearts in reverence and wonder, and join together in the beauty of this golden morning.
Thank you. great-grandmother, Margaret Linich Wuljevac, lived to be 102 years old. By the end of her life, she had a very hard time remembering who we all were when we came to visit her, but she could remember vividly the color of the babushka she was wearing when she arrived in America. She told the story of her journey from Croatia in the early part of the 20th century frequently and excitedly to anyone who would listen. Clearly, it was a defining moment in her life. She spoke of the vast numbers of people on the ship, of the camaraderie among so many strangers, and of the emotions they all shared: excitement, fear, hope. She met my great-grandfather on that ship, and they were married shortly after arriving at Ellis Island. I grew up hearing these tales. They informed who I was and who I would become. We were a family of recent immigrants. Being in America, no matter how hard life was far better than being in the old country. When I became an adult, I realized that there were some things about Grandma Wuljevac's life that just didn't add up. Like, why was my grandfather, the second son, named after his father, but not his older brother wasn't? So I asked my grandmother about it, and she told me the real reason Grandma Wuljevac came here. When she boarded that ship, she wasn't alone. She had a son with her. She was a young, unwed mother, a disgrace to her family and her village. The only hope she had for happiness was to leave her country behind and begin anew here in America. Here, her story could change. And it did. My great-grandfather knew the truth of her situation and married her anyway, raising my uncle as his own child. The courage it must have taken for her to pack up her child and leave behind the only life she had ever known is unimaginable. Not everyone is fortunate enough to know these kinds of stories about their families. If you know yours, I encourage you to write it down. Preserve it for future generations. If you don't, I encourage you to find out if you can. You never know what you might find. Come, let us worship together. Our time for all ages today is a story, sort of, about El Día de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. And there are going to be some pictures on the TV up here. If there are any kids out there who can't see, I would invite you to come on up. This whole front bench is empty. So, El Día de los Muertos, or the Day of the Dead. This holiday began thousands of years ago with the ancient Aztecs, who lived in what is now Mexico. The Aztecs believed that life did not end with death, but continued on in a different form. The Aztecs celebrated death and held festivals for their dead relatives at this time of year. When the Spanish arrived to the Aztec Empire, they wanted the Aztecs to become Catholic, the religion of the Spanish. The Aztecs, however, didn't want to change their beliefs. Over time, however, most of the people in Mexico became Catholic, but they held on to part of their old beliefs, like their celebration of the dead. Today, the Day of the Dead is celebrated in millions of households in Mexico and the United States. The holiday begins on October 31st with preparations in the home, cleaning, cooking, yard work, so that everything is neat and clean for the celebration. Each family makes an altar in a special place in their home to honor their relatives and loved ones who have died. They spend time each day sitting in front of the altar and saying prayers and remembering their loved ones. While no two altars are exactly the same, they do contain similar kinds of items. Photos, marigolds, the yellow flowers that you see in the pictures, food, candles, sugar skulls, and pictures of religious figures. Food is a very important part of the altar. People leave mangoes, bananas, plantains, grapes, or any other fruit that is available. The family also spends time making special bread called pan de muerto, or bread of the dead, to leave on the altars as well. No altar would be complete without sugar skulls, which children often get to decorate and eat. They're made all out of sugar. Every family would also have skeleton figurines to decorate the altars. The skeletons are usually brightly painted and having fun. On the morning of November 2nd, everyone gets ready for the parade. There are floats and costumes, music and dancing. The parade ends at the town cemetery, where the graves have already been cleaned and decorated, much like the altars at home. The families spend the whole night in the cemetery, remembering their loved ones, telling stories, singing, dancing, and being together. El Día de los Muertos is one of the most important holidays for Mexican and Mexican-American people. It is a way to remember those who have died and to celebrate with those who are living. It is a celebration everyone in the family enjoys.
The Unitarian Universalist Association has published a supplement to the readings in our hymnal, just like we have a supplement to the hymns in our hymnal. This just came out recently. It's called Lifting Our Voices. And the words that I chose to share with you this morning to guide us into a time of silence, meditation, and prayer come from Alice Walker. To acknowledge our ancestors means we are aware that we did not make ourselves, that the line stretches all the way back, perhaps to God or to gods. We remember them because it is an easy thing to forget that we are not the first to suffer, rebel, fight, love, and die. The grace with which we embrace life in spite of the pain and the sorrows is always a measure of what has gone before. And now, surrounded by the sounds of our community, we will keep silence for a few moments together. Each time we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry of this congregation. We take time to memorialize those who have died, to celebrate with those who are joyous, and to call into this community of care those who need our love and support. This morning, Joe and Lori Fatchett McGee are happy to celebrate the third birthday of their granddaughter, Emma. Many blessings upon her. Many folks in our community who remember a former member of our congregation, Lynn Willard, have been concerned about her well-being as she has lived in the path of Patricia, the hurricane, and she is doing well. We pray for all of those who have been in the wake of that storm. Trudy Deal asks for thoughts and prayers for her father, Richard, who's struggling with coping with going deaf. And Jan Noden invites the prayers and thoughts of our community as her brother Ray is in his final days at home, surrounded by those he loves. Dina Braccio is grieving this week the death of her beloved dog, Rudy. We hold her in our thoughts and prayers. And Rhonda Richardson shares that her father passed away peacefully yesterday. Our hearts go out to Rhonda and her family. Peace, we pray, for her whole family. And Claudia Miller, as so many in this congregation who have been friends and acquaintances with Ginger Vaughn over the years, shares fond memories of times shared with her. Ginger died unexpectedly and suddenly this week. We offer our thoughts and prayers to all who are most deeply touched by her loss, and we will gather to celebrate her life on November 21st for all who wish to join. For all of these names spoken aloud and those held in the sanctuary of our hearts, we give our grateful thanks. And I invite you to join with me now in the spirit of prayer. Everything can change in a moment. Life as we knew it is suddenly gone. And it can feel disorienting, frightening, exhilarating. What do we do now? Everything can change in a moment, for good, and sometimes for worse. All we really can know, all we really have, is this moment, filled as it is with all of our feelings. All we really have is this moment, and the truth is, this moment has everything we need. This moment has everything we need if we're willing to open our hearts. So teach us to open our hearts, Spirit of Life. Teach us to open our hearts so that we may find what we seek. Connection, blessing, gratitude, and peace. May it be so, and amen. I have a reflection that I am privileged to read on behalf of Judy Brannon this morning. Judy is the person who regularly creates the artwork for the covers of our orders of service. And this week when she sent in the artwork, she sent with it an explanation. And I found the explanation, the story really, to be so powerful that I asked Judy's permission to share it with you. And I'm glad she's here to hear her story shared, even though her voice isn't up to sharing it herself today. So I invite you to look at the cover, the artwork cover, as you hear this story. I met Mr. Gustafson at a family gathering when I was about 8 years old. While I noticed that family members treated him with great deference and respect, I merely assumed that this was because he was an elderly relative. Through the years, I often heard mention of old Mr. Gustafson. His name was always mentioned almost reverently, but I never thought long or deeply about his relationship to my father's family. About 50 years later, Ellis Island records were digitized and made available on the internet. Curious, I started looking up relatives. I quickly came across my grandmother Hilma Hedlund's record. I learned that Adolf Gustafson had sponsored my grandmother's immigration from Sweden, as well as many other immigrants. As it turned out, this man was not a relative, but rather a friend. The handwritten records depicted on today's cover are screenshots of ship's manifests from more than a century ago, documenting Mr. Gustafson's generosity. My father's family's gratitude lasted generations. It appeared to me, after looking through other online resources, that Mr. Gustafson was not a wealthy man. Records show his occupation as laborer, but he had apparently helped many people get started in their new country. His acts of kindness continue to ripple through the years. Also on the cover is a forlorn-looking tree shedding its leaves. This sad little tree represents my grandmother, who, after leaving the privations of an economic and agricultural mess in Sweden and enduring an uncomfortable trip across the ocean, faced terrible adversity once she got to Pennsylvania. She was widowed 4 times and outlived 4 of her 7 children. She too died young, orphaning 3 surviving children. Just knowing this one immigrant's story of endured hardships and giant risks taken to ensure her descendants better lives, it's easy to see why so many cultures revere and even worship their ancestors. I'm also reminded that even now, waves of people are risking their lives to leave untenable situations in their home countries and seeking better lives for themselves and their families elsewhere. One of the most recent museums to open in China is called the Modern Filial Piety Culture Museum. It opened in March in Sichuan Province and was backed by the government as part of an effort aimed at reinforcing their traditional Chinese practice of respect for parents and other family elders. According to Confucianism, filial piety is a foundational virtue. When people learn to be loving, respectful, caring, and loyal to their parents and elders, it strengthens their capacity to express those qualities in friendships, as spouses, and even as citizens. One Japan Today journalist writing about the recent revival of the virtue of filial piety in Japanese society as well says that people in the East were raised on filial piety the way that Christians are raised on do unto others. That is one of the many, here is a saying from Confucius, a youth who does not respect his elders will achieve nothing when he grows up. That is one of many well-known filial piety sayings from Confucius, who was born in 551 before the Common Era. This virtue was being cultivated in the East well before Christianity even existed. One of the most famous texts on the subject was written either in the late 12th or early 13th century. It's called The 24 Paragons of Filial Piety, and it contains stories designed to serve as instruction and example. The new museum is a kind of modern update on those old stories with an explicit goal of inspiring greater devotion for parents and elders. Another dimension of filial piety in Confucian practice is veneration of ancestors. Ancestors include the living as well as the dead. The values of love, care, and loyalty that children are taught to practice in relationship with living ancestors must also be extended to their deceased family members. The veneration of ancestors includes a variety of rituals to express those values, just like we heard about the values that Mexicans express in Dia de los Muertos rituals. Confucianism has had an enormous influence on many countries in East Asia. In Japan, for example, Confucianism interacted with Buddhism to create new religious and cultural forms. This can be seen in the Japanese Buddhist observance of Obon. Like Dia de los Muertos, Obon is a commemoration of ancestors. It's a three-day summer ceremony in which people take time to remember their ancestors and express their gratitude through participation in memorial services in the temples and a variety of home and community-based rituals. People engage in dances of gratitude, they visit and clean up their loved ones' graves, they prepare altars with special foods in their houses, and they hang lanterns outside their houses to guide their ancestors. At the end of Obon, people gather in community at a body of water and place lit lanterns, floating lanterns, on bodies of water to guide their ancestors back to their world for another year. Now, just like with any religious tradition, people imbue their own meanings into these rituals and have diverse ways of understanding what they're doing, literally or metaphorically or somewhere in between. Other ways in which the virtues of filial piety have migrated beyond China's borders include special ceremonies for recognizing and celebrating elders in general. In Japan, for example, there's a national holiday celebrated every September called Respect for the Aged Day. This holiday is celebrated with visits to elder relatives, community care projects for elder people, and places, and in some places, special programs of song and dance performed by younger people for older people, followed by lovely receptions with food and drink. As another example, Koreans who are turning 60 have a special birthday celebration called Hwangap, which literally means returning to the beginning. Koreans use the Chinese zodiac, which counts time in 60-year cycles. When a person turns 60, they begin a new 60-year cycle, and the occasion is marked with special clothes and gifts, a wonderful meal, and most importantly, honor and respect offered from younger family members. The ethic of duty and care for elders and for ancestors is prevalent in many Eastern cultures and has been challenged in recent decades by the increasing exposure of places in the East to Western culture and values. Some people say this is a good thing. Other people say it's a bad thing, and the truth is probably mixed. Whereas the idea of a nursing home as an option for elders was once unheard of in China, that's begun to change just in recent years. As more and more rural Chinese people have traveled to cities for economic opportunities, there has been a sharp increase in the number of adult children neglecting to take on the traditional responsibilities of caring for elder parents. In an effort to remind people of their obligations, China created a new law in 2012 on the protection of the rights and interests of elderly people. One section of the new law makes it a crime for people who live away from their elderly parents to fail to visit or send greetings on a regular basis. Of course, such a law is all but unenforceable, but it stands as a statement that the duty to care for elder people is not only a moral duty, but also a legal duty. And so as we begin this month of worship services, exploring what it means to be a people of ancestry, I'm wondering about what difference it makes in countries and places in the world where there is this deep, ancient tradition of upholding values of filial piety. Even when those values are applied inconsistently and unevenly, I imagine that the overall attitude toward old age is different in those countries than it is in our own. In our country, old age seems to be an often marginalized identity. We have a strong bias of ageism, which runs both ways. I know that it's true in ministry. I can't tell you how many people told me when I started in ministry that I was too young to be a minister. It was often a joke, but there was a question behind it, like, how old are you really? And I've heard from older colleagues who have all but been told by congregational search committees that they're too old for serious consideration for a call. I'm sure a similar dynamic exists in other professions. Hollywood offers one of the most recent egregious examples. A story from the 37-year-old actress Maggie Gyllenhaal. Is that how you say it?
Gyllenhaal.
She was told by a Hollywood producer that she was too old to play the leading lady part of a love interest opposite a 55-year-old man. I'm quite sure that there are elements of sexism mixed in there too, but that is a topic for another day. The point is that the mainstream United States culture has little that's good to say about aging. In fact, our culture glorifies youth to such an extent that people spend billions upon billions of dollars for cosmetic surgery that promises to erase the signs of age. I'm sure you can think of other examples about ways in which our culture marginalizes older people. So if there are any on the tip of your tongue that you think must be mentioned now, I invite you to shout them out. Senior housing. Lack of adequate transportation. That's an important one. I've read many stories this week of people who have been so isolated in older age by lack of adequate transportation that they have gradually lost all of their connections to their communities. And another story from India, another culture that has traditionally venerated ancestors of elder parents of young Indian immigrants who have been unsure how to handle old age without the traditional safety net of their children caring for them. And they're creating many innovative new traditions of community care. But one of the things that I found so remarkable of one older Indian parent whose children who live in the United States have invited them to come live with them, they said that coming to the United States and living in a suburb with their children would be akin to living in a 5-star jail. They'd be so isolated that they'd have no opportunity for the life that they've known. I read a report of a psychological study which concluded that people growing up in the United States develop negative stereotypes about aging by the time we're 6 years old. That isn't healthy for anyone, of course. But the good news is that there has been a host of really excellent work in recent years trying to change this dynamic. The work is primarily being led by baby boomers as they approach retirement and their own experience of aging. The leaders include physicians, psychologists, sociologists, ethicists, and anthropologists and spiritual leaders. From their respective vantage points, these people are working to reform attitudes about aging among older people in particular, and ultimately in society at large. Each of them frames their work differently in their particular context, but what they have in common is the idea that we need a reformation of values about aging in our society. They've written a whole host of books on the subject with titles such as From Aging to Saging by Rabbi Schachter Shalomi, The Art of Aging by Dr. Sherwin Nuland, and a new one from the Unitarian Universalist Association Skinner House Press called Landscapes of Aging and Spirituality by Kathleen Montgomery. Each of these three books and so many more like them offer resources for older people who want to learn how they can effectively harvest the wisdom of their years, cultivate spiritual maturity, and serve as a mentor for future generations. Those of us not yet in the winter season of our lives also have a part to play in this dreamed of transformation of values. Dr. Nuland suggests that those who are not yet elders must learn to embrace elders, for when we do so, we're also learning to embrace our future selves if we are fortunate enough to live to old age. This will surely benefit us as individuals, but it will also benefit society as a whole for more of us to be able to see people and the lifespan in its wholeness. To embrace elders, of course, we must be in relationship with elders. We know that there used to be many more natural opportunities for interaction amongst the generation, but our lives are so age segregated now. In fact, religious communities are one of the few places left outside of families where people of all ages create community together. Young people must be in relationship with older people if we hope to learn from their wisdom. And of course, the more we can combat negative stereotypes about aging, the more we can contribute to the humanizing of our society. These are values which are natural fits for us as Unitarian Universalists. So what does it mean to be a people of ancestry? There's a lot of good work being done in our culture right now to lift up thoughtful answers to this question. And I think we have a lot to learn from the answers that other cultures have found. I think we have a lot to learn from Confucianism and from other religions and cultures around the world that have never stopped valuing ancestors. Anthropologists say that the veneration of ancestors has traditionally served to bind generations together, to ease the grief of the bereaved, and to reduce anxiety about our own mortality. We could use a little more of all three of those blessings in our culture. In addition to these, I would add that practices to honor elders and venerate ancestors awaken and deepen our gratitude for the sacrifices they made that we might live, the sacrifices they made that we might be here now. And who among us couldn't benefit from deepening our capacity for gratitude? We'll be exploring this theme all month long, but for today I'd like to leave you with one more gift of inspiration, a poem of gratitude from Marta Valentin, Gratitude to My Ancestors. With honor and respect, these eyes see for you all manner of life you could not have imagined. My lips move with the rhythm of your words flowing through me, my tongue caressing each morsel of wisdom I am graced to pass on. Your DNA rides my veins, and with every breath I take, your cautious steps from the past toward a fuller life become bold moves now. Bold moves I make toward my destiny. Together we wrap arms around a new generation, here to become who they were born to be, to cast their magic as we once did, and to bless each day for their ability to do so. For you, dear ancestors, we live this day. May it be so, and amen. Today I give thanks for this multi-generational community of infants and sages, and for all of the ancestors who helped tend this place so that we might inherit it as a gift for our own spiritual lives, and for the inspiration it offers us to bring our values out into the world for the humanizing of society. This place has been tended by those who came before, and now it is our turn And so we take an offering in gratitude for the gifts we have been given. Will you please be seated for a few announcements? The Capital Campaign team is happy to share that we have now received gifts significant enough to ensure that we will be able to complete phase one of our expansion and renovation, and further details about the progress of the campaign can be found in a thread from the web. The building expansion team is holding an informational meeting in the sanctuary after both services today, and invite any of you who are interested to attend to learn more about the next steps in our progress. One of the great things about this community is we mourn together, we love together, and we also know how to play together. This morning, as you go, I remind you that we exist here not only for our own spiritual nurture and uplift, but also because the world needs the values that we cultivate here in this place, in our hearts. So go as you go, knowing you have a gift to give. The world needs your blessing. Go in peace. Will you please take a moment to turn and greet your neighbors as you leave?